It's a sunny, crisp mid-October morning in Victor, Montana. Lucy Brieger and Steve Elliott have a long day ahead of them at their 42-acre farming operation called Lifeline Produce. Their potatoes need harvesting and...
Our onions have been grown and harvested, and now they're in the shed curing. But now they're dry and ready to go to market, so we're going to clean them and stick them into 25-pound bags for sale at farmer's market.
Steve Elliott's been farming since 1980. He calls it a beautiful balance of physical, intellectual, and spiritual inputs.
I mean, you get to work hard. You get to think all the time. You get to work with people closely, doing things where you get to communicate because it doesn't take up all your brain space to weed a bed of onions or anything like that.
Lucy Brieger also started farming in the early 80s.
I'm particularly ill-suited for anything else.
She says she settled on farming after a fairly intensive process of elimination.
Going through school and graduate school and did volunteer work for this and that organization, nonprofits, agencies. Couldn't really stand any of it. I don't know. Maybe they probably couldn't stand me either. So when I ended up at Lifeline in 1983 as an apprentice, I kind of felt like I'd come home.
Elliott and Brieger have owned the Lifeline property for about 20 years now. Steve says they've learned the intimate, the little details of the place after working it all those years.
You know, you only get 6, 7, 8 rotations in a life. So you get to, experience almost like time travel. You're there. I remember when this was here the last time, 8 years ago. And that connection to the land and that brings out the memories and stuff like that is just a beautiful, deep thing to experience.
They say they're now noticing things that don't match most of their experiences over the past 2 decades. Steve says the nematode damage to their crops has become worse over the past decade. Now, nematodes are common, tiny bugs that live in the soil. Some are quite beneficial, but some, like the root knot nematode, are not. They can mar potato skins.
I can't help but think that it's gotten worse because the ground hasn't frozen hard in 10 or 15 years. When we moved here, the ground reliably froze deep. Now you talk to guys that run a backhoe, they can dig all year round. Once they break through the crust. The year I moved to Montana, Flathead Lake froze solid. Nothing like that has happened in a long, long time.
Senator John Tester says he's also noticing similar trends. Tester was farming in north central Montana long before he knew he'd ever serve in Congress. In fact, the Democrat still farms the same land his family's worked for 40 years. In a newspaper column he wrote earlier this year that drew widespread attention, Tester noted unusual weather is now just a fact of life in many parts of Montana.
My father built a reservoir in the late 1940s, early 1950s. They had it dug basically a pit to store water for the livestock. When he dug that pit, it filled with water, and it had never been dry until the late 90s and early 2000. It was dry 3 years in a row because we experienced a drought in that point in time. My mother was still alive, and she said it was more severe than in the 1930s. We've seen areas, now this wasn't directly on my farm, but areas in Montana where we get a year's worth of rainfall in a week, 1 year, causing incredible flooding. And then the next year on the same piece of ground, because of no rain for months and months and months, they end up with very bad wildfires. Same piece of ground.
Tester adds he and his wife are also now dealing with unusual insect problems.
We have an insect called a wheatstem sawfly. Never had it when I was growing up. And the reason is because when I was growing up, we'd have a week or two of 30 below weather every winter. It was like clockwork. Now, seldom does it get down to 30 below. When it does, it's for a very short period of time. That allows these insects to overwinter and survive. They come out in the spring. They lay eggs in the wheat plant. That larvae comes out of the stem of the wheat plant right before harvest, cuts the stem off, and the wheat plant goes down. I mean, it looks like a hailstorm hit the crop. Lose 40 to 50 to 60% of your wheat crop.
And that, he says, has a major impact on any producer's bottom line. Tester says climate change presents very real consequences to ag. It's also a very polarizing topic. Is it natural or man-made? Is it even happening? Well, back at Lifeline Produce in the Bitterroot Valley, Steve Elliott and Lucy Brieger believe scientists have presented a compelling case that it is happening and greenhouse gases are largely to blame.
I mean, what do they have to gain by ginning up a fabricated world tragedy? I mean, what could possibly be their reason? And so, yeah, I mean, I don't believe that I've lived long enough to have a personal view on climate. I have a view on weather, and certainly the weather has changed, but I can't tell you if it's from climate change or not. That's not what I do. I'm a farmer. But without a shadow of a doubt, things have changed, and I have no reason in the world not to believe Professor Running and the others that give us this warning that we are messing up.
Montana State University cropping systems researcher Dr. Perry Miller studies agricultural systems that mostly produce Montana's grain crops. Miller confirms what these farmers are noticing.
There are some research papers on this topic and exactly out of this region, and it's basically showing an earlier onset of spring. And so just if you compare temperatures in that March, April, May period going back 50, 60 years, you see a pretty linear trend, and that's coming out of a publication in southwestern Saskatchewan, one right out of here, out of Bozeman with Luther Talbert, and then I just came across one in the Central Plains that showed the exact same trend. So it's just an earlying up of spring is one of the most dominant temperature trends.
Miller says within the agricultural scientific community, there's growing interest in understanding longer-term climate trends.
We went through about a 15, 20-year period where we had drier than normal conditions over much of our main wheat-growing region in Montana. And somewhere in the early 2000s, well, mid-2000s, I would say, it looks like that switch is thrown, and now we've had a set of normal to above-normal water years up there, which has been really great for production in that part of the world. And that is consistent with some of these decadal scale phenomena that have been observed historically. You know, is that what we're going to see going forward? I think, you know, that's the question everybody would like to know, because you could make some really good investment decisions if you knew you were going to be in a wetter period versus a drier period.
Greg Price manages Missoula's River Road neighborhood farm and community garden for the nonprofit Garden City Harvest. The 3.25-acre farm lies just south of the Russell Street Bridge and offers 55 community garden plots as well as community-supported agriculture share programs. It also produces thousands of pounds of vegetables for the Poverello Center for the Homeless. Price finds little comfort in the possibility of significant long-term climate swings.
And that could be very significant for agriculture. You could have places that completely turn to deserts, other places that are getting swamped with too much rain. And in neither of those extreme conditions is agriculture going to thrive. Agriculture, kind of like people, prefer moderate temperatures, you know, in general. You know, there's a range for all plants. Folks here in like 2007, were like, when we had the scorching hot record-setting summer, people kept asking, boy, your warm weather stuff must just be loving this weather. And it wasn't loving the weather. They're not adapted for 100 degrees. Basically, plants just close up shop and they just go into a dormancy to protect themselves because they can't keep up with the heat. They can't cool themselves fast enough. And again, you get into water issues. You know, plants pull water out of the ground. They essentially sweat through a process called transpiration. And without that, they go into a stress mode and they're not going to produce as well.
MSU's Dr. Perry Miller says there's no hard evidence yet on what sort of direct impact climate change could have on crop yields.
There's the beneficial effect of increased CO2 concentration, which is, you know, that's the direct pipeline for plant growth, is how much CO2 they can bring in through their leaves and turn into structural and storage carbons that lead to grain yield. So that's, you know, that's a positive thing, I guess, from that perspective. Cardinal temperatures, what kind of extreme temperatures a crop can stand, what kind of variation in frost and how that changes over the growing cycle could be important. But it comes back to water. And if you sit in a room with the guys who are climate modelers, precipitation is the one that's really tough to model. And that is such an overwhelming factor in semi-arid regions like Montana that it's hard to know how that's going to turn out.
Producers have always had to be flexible, but if long-term weather patterns become more erratic, they'll have to increasingly come up with more creative ways to cope.
There's been some growth room studies under controlled air concentrations using elevated CO2 concentrations, and they actually can show that a herbicide like glyphosate, which is sort of the foundation for no-till agriculture throughout the world, becomes much, much less effective at high CO2 concentrations. And so that's a worry. You know, what if it's a molecule that's allowed us to do some soil-friendly practices relative to maintaining cover on that soil, and if we lost that tool, how would that change things?
Senator John Tester says Mother Nature is telling us very clearly that we are having an impact on our climate. He adds we must respond, double down on our efforts to develop cleaner energy sources. And to those who doubt humanity is having any significant impact on our climate?
I go back to John McCain in 2000 when he said it doesn't really matter if humans caused it or not, we ought to act like we did. That's really the case. I mean, I think that the long-term impacts of this potential climate change is that it puts our food security at risk. You put your food security at risk, then you're looking at potential hungry people. You put hungry people out there, your democracy goes away. Look, there's some pretty horrific outcomes on this if we don't deal with it like it's real. And by the way, if we look back on this and say, geez, all these bad things have happened and we did nothing to try to mitigate it, I don't know that that's the direction anybody wants to head.
Missoula's River Road neighborhood farm manager Greg Price says the agricultural community is starting to talk about the issue.
We're looking for leadership, I think, and looking for guidance on a larger scale. But we do certainly talk about it. But I think because the agricultural folks that I'm involved with personally, which is, again, smaller, 20 to 40 acre operations and under, those folks I don't think they really feel like agriculture that they're doing and that the world that they're involved in is really contributing to climate change too much. But people are definitely concerned about it. There's lots of talk about it. I personally find it very frustrating because I feel like there's a lack of leadership, but there's also a lack of responsibility being taken. We're all waiting for somebody else to kind of tell us what to do, when in fact there's things that we can all do on our own in reducing your consumption and in the way that we use carbon-based fossil fuels.
At Lifeline Produce, Steve Elliott and Lucy Brieger are doing just that. They've installed solar panels, brew some biodiesel, and use human power when possible. Yes, they say they're concerned about how climate change could affect agriculture in the long term, but Steve adds he has lots of faith in tomorrow's farmers.
Each generation rises to what they need to do. I mean, arguably, they may not do the right thing, but, we're a smart group of monkeys. We'll figure things out. Might not work well for some of us for a while. In fact, it most certainly won't, but it gives us the opportunity to rise to a higher self, so they will have plenty of opportunity to be better people than we are.
For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Edward O'Brien.